This is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Home Gadget Geeks, show number 180, recorded on August 14th, 2014. Here on Home Gadget Geeks, we cover your favorite tech gadgets that find their way into your home, news, reviews, product updates, and conversation, all for the average tech guy. I'm your host, Jim Carlson, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in Bellevue, Nebraska. We post the show each week with world-class show notes. And this week, we're going to have some, I know I say that every week, we're going to have some really good show notes, but John, our guest, has included some very good notes out there. And so world-class show notes, we'll call them, out at TheAverageGuy.tv. If you have questions, comments, or contributions, we'd love to have you contact. You can send me an email. Jim@theaverageguy.tv. Track me down on Twitter @JCollison or call in those questions if you'd like to our crank call phone line. I've said this for like 6 weeks now and nobody's crank called me. I'm a little disappointed with you guys. I know you guys can do it. We'd love some great calls. Call in 402-478-8450. It's my Google Voice number. It'll just automatically go into voicemail. Leave a crank call. It'd be great. Or actually, seriously, we'd just love your questions. Comments would be great as well, and we'll play them right here on the show. And now Home Gadget Geeks is a part of the Geeks Network, a fixed Geeks Network. Find the links to this show and many other great podcasts out at thegeeksnetwork.com. Join us in chat, watch, or listen live. We're now on YouTube as well as Spreaker, and find all the navigation over at theaverageguy.tv. All right, I mentioned before, I'm on my third podcast for the day, and maybe a little podcast punch drunk in this setting here today, having some trouble, just at this point. It was a tough, I got home early this evening and I was like, oh, maybe I'll just take a nap. And Christian and I were talking about that and he's like, oh, I can't take a nap this late in the night. I'll never be able to get to sleep. And he's probably right. And so we'll do another. We did a podcast with Social Bro. So if you're listening to this in order, we had Social Bro and I'm going to spread these out. So, John, we'll actually publish this one next weekend. For you. So we'll record it tonight, but we'll publish it next weekend.
Sounds good.
And we'll have Social Bro come up. That was actually really interesting. I recorded that first time ever, recorded 7:30 in the morning on a Thursday. And a few of you caught the Twitter feed coming in, the tweets, and joined me this morning. So 7:30 podcast. And of course, we podcasted at Gallup this afternoon and then another one this evening. So we want to say, if you're joining me live, thanks for coming in. Appreciate it. And we've got a great security podcast or security focused podcast for you this evening. All the way over to the left, and we get to see him every once in a while now. And actually, with Cyber Frontiers coming up, Christian, we are going to, we've actually got one scheduled for Monday night, right?
Yeah, it's going to be fun. I tried so hard to be consistent about that show this summer, and
it's
then
so
I just
hard.
It was like, and then it was like life happened all over again at work. So, no, that's going to be great. It's good to be back on this show. Good to see John again as well. And so, ready to rock and roll.
Very good. And so that'll be Christian and I are working on getting Cyber Frontiers just more consistent. So again, if you have got that. Schedule automatically. If you subscribe, there's the word I'm looking for. If you've subscribed, we appreciate you doing that. We actually have some brand new subscription options too. Normally I'd save this till the end of the show, but super important. If you wanted video for any of our programs, so you're waiting for video RSS or video on iTunes, all available now. So Home Gadget Geeks, Cyber Frontiers, Home Tech Tips, both RSS and iTunes video feeds, they're all available out at theaverageguy.tv/subscribe. So go out there, take a peek at those. Spent a bunch of time on them last weekend and getting them set up. And so I know a few of you wanted that stuff. Head out there if you want to subscribe to those.
Jim, what time for Monday nights? We're doing that at 8 on Monday, right?
I think we are, yeah, 8 central for that one. So if you want to come out and join us live, we will be doing that. And Ashton, a friend of yours, right, from school will be joining us?
Yeah, from the ACES program at the University of Maryland. So we're going to start mixing some content and make it a little bit more uniform between cybersecurity and big data. So look forward for that. And,
yeah, that'll be good.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, good stuff. So that's coming up. Watch that if you want to join us on Monday nights. We're going to try every other Monday night and see how that works moving forward. But again, big news, all those video RSS feeds are out there. So if you've been waiting for them, the small version, 300 to 400 meg, the large version, 600 to 800 megs, they're not small, but they're video. And if you want to get those downloaded, you can do that or subscribe through iTunes. So a lot of work went into that. We'd love to have you take advantage of that as well. And those are powered by MediaFire. So if you go back a couple shows, MediaFire, well, we talked with those guys over there, and I've decided to take them up on their offer for 1 terabyte of storage with direct links for $25 a year, and a pretty good deal. We'll give that a shot as well. All right, let's introduce John Nye. John is no stranger to the podcast. We've had him on before, back June 19th, I want to say, something like that. But
sounds right.
John, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you having me back.
Good to have you. Let's for those who maybe didn't go all the way back and didn't listen to that podcast for whatever reason, let's get a little bit of background on you because some things have changed. So tell us what you're doing these days.
I am a pen tester. I'm an ethical hacker over at First Data. It keeps me quite busy. On top of that, I'm still in school. I'm this close to done with my bachelor's. I'm on start my last term. I am so stoked. But I'm going to keep going because I'm a sadist and get my master's as well. So it keeps me busy. All that's in cybersecurity. And I guess I'm a hacker.
very, very cool. And an ethical hacker. It'd be great. We're not going to necessarily cover that. We covered that back on 0160 something, I think, back there. Just go to the site, go to the search bar. Type in John Nye, and it'll take you to the last one if you want to listen to that as well. So, John, tell us, let's just dive right in. You spent some time at a couple conferences out in Vegas. Why don't you talk a little bit about what you went to, and we'll kind of dive in.
So, well, last week, it was a long week, a very tame and you know, church-like week in Vegas. I went to the Black Hat Conference, and then immediately following that is DEF CON. And they're both conferences for security professionals. They're both hacker conferences. And the two together, they like to call Hacker Summer Camp, which I think is kind of a funny thing. They use that hashtag a lot on Twitter. And so the difference is that Black Hat is more professional. I mean, it's like $2,000 for a ticket. So it's not cheap. I only went because I managed to score a scholarship ticket since I'm a student. It's pretty expensive, and they have basically a trade show where they're giving out every t-shirt under the sun and trying to get you to buy their products. And then they have a lot of really awesome talks, which is the best part of it is all the talks. And then you've got DEF CON, which is still a security conference. It's still a hacker conference, and it was still amazing talks, but the other part's a little different. It's only $220 to get into that one. So it brings in a much wider variety of clientele, I guess you might say, or people who show up. And you had, I was saying earlier to these guys, it's almost was kind of split into thirds to where a third of the people are, you know, middle-aged and you know, professionals in the industry, and then you had another third of the people that are also professionals, but they're like they know they're good kind of guys, you know, kind of elitist, and they've got their friends that have been there, they've been going since it was started 20 years ago, and then you have this other group, which is young guys who think hacking is cool, and they might be good at it. I have no idea, I didn't know them, but they also think that to be a hacker, you have to wear a specific uniform. And those are the ones that made me laugh the most, you know. And it was either the guy who would have a black fedora and a black shirt and, you know, like dark jeans, or the guy who would, if anybody remembers the movie Hackers, dress like Snow Crash in the movie Hackers, which is the guy who had the ski goggles on his neck and like a plaid shirt that was too tight. it was pretty funny. So you had the whole array, but it was, both were a great time. A lot of good information.
Yeah. Kristen, we call you a growth hacker. Certainly that term has changed, right? That hacker term has changed, right? A little bit as we're, you know, and so it's interesting, John. Sounds like, I mean, there's still some old school hacking when we think of that way, but that hacker terminology is really starting to go to a positive direction.
Yep, I would agree. And it's a positive, the industry in general is no doubt in a positive growth mode right now. You could tell by the amount of people that were there. you could tell by the insane amount of people that were like, can you just, you know, take my card and give me a call? Because we really need somebody to come work for us. You know, I'm like, I just started my job and I like it. I'm not in any hurry. You know, they treat me good. But it's just, it's crazy. Everyone, even at the on the trade show floor or whatever, I was surprised because they have the monitors up where they should be showing their product. And 5 out of 10 of them, at least half of them, had job postings. I mean, it's like a negative 3% unemployment rate right now.
Yeah, it's certainly a hot business going on. Let's talk a little bit about, let's do Black Hat first.
Okay.
Let's talk through some key items there.
Absolutely.
You got the keynote listed, although you got an interesting topic about USB right below
yes.
that. I don't know if you want to summarize. Is there something worth summarizing around the keynote, or can we dive right into?
The keynote was only great because it's Dan Gere, and I don't know if any of you have ever seen him, but I hadn't seen him before. He's one of those kind of genius guys. Like, everything you read that he writes is just mind-blowingly deep and really makes a lot of sense, and his presentation was similar. But he walked on stage in a suit, but other than that, he looked like Neil Young. Which was just awesome. You know, mutton chops that go out to here. And so I was like, is that the right guy? But I highly recommend, if you get some time, I put a link to the text of his actual speech and a video of the speech. And you might, the text and the speech are probably about the same. You know, he's not like the best presenter I've ever seen in my life, but the topics and the ideas in it, there was some really cool stuff. And that was really impressive.
Good. We'll throw those in the show notes if anybody yep. wants to go.
And they're there.
Take yep. a peek about those as well. Yeah, I'll put those in the show notes with
okay.
when we publish them here as well.
Got it.
Out at the Average Guy at TV. Let's talk about USB because
yes.
Some interesting points in there, mm-hmm. especially around flash drives. And I don't think this will come to as a big surprise maybe to our audience, but let's talk about that a little bit because we have
absolutely.
Gotten a little lackadaisical, right, with USB
yeah,
drives.
Yeah, absolutely we have. And it has gotten that way. So a lot of companies have gone to VDI. So when you go to VDI, the only way to really save your stuff in a lot of circumstances is to use USB. I know my college has even done that, and they actually want you to bring a USB and plug it into their computers. Granted, it's a VDI, so even if you ruin it, it's going to disappear anyway. So I mean, but this talk was interesting because these guys had managed to actually put malware on the firmware of USB devices, everything from a thumb drive to a phone. And they have a little ROM that is actually writable. And they would write malware right onto there, and that would go right past your spyware, anti-spyware, your antivirus. It was pretty interesting stuff. So you could make it look like a keyboard, like the USB rubber ducky, or a lot of other things. So it allowed people to get access. That's the one that everyone's scared of. Like, this one has been in the news left and right everywhere. It's a big deal.
One of the things that we do in our organization, of course, we just lock out USB ports.
That's the way to go. Yeah.
Right. And is that really the way? I mean, is that mm-hmm. just how you stop it?
And that's what we do. In fact, if you plug in a USB of any sort, including your phone, to an authorized network computer, it will become encrypted. We will encrypt it right away. And so, yeah, you could plug it in, but it's toast. You have to wipe it to use it again.
Christian, any changes to USB policies there at the University of Maryland going in, you know, after this last, you know, fall and spring there? Are you guys changing anything with this new center that's going in? Are you making any changes that way?
Yeah, I mean, the requirements for university security policy are very different from corporate. Just because with students, you know, students live on USB drives and a lot of them are not, you know, paying or interested in encrypted stuff. And because a lot of the academic communities bring your own device, where there's even faculty members who are bringing their own devices, no one really wants to try and enforce that level of regulation. So most of the security concentration is happening at the network level when these devices are connecting to the network. The exception to that being the mobile device security was a big conversation in the university circles in the post event that happened this year. So, and I think the reality is a lot of people struggle with the large cost associated with encrypting mobile devices and actually making that work in an enterprise fashion. So that's something they're kind of confronted with head on, and a lot of companies are as well. But USBs are kind of a hands-off thing in any university environment, mm-hmm. for the most part.
Hands-off meaning they're going to work.
Yeah, meaning, okay. like, you're going to be able to plug them in and use them, whether that's, like, in a classroom projector where you have to give a presentation, or, you know, obviously no one's going to say, hey, you can't plug in a USB to your own laptop. Mm-hmm. And that's, like, 90% of what students are doing, right, those two things. So, mm-hmm. And really for teachers, most of the teachers use webmail in a very scary way to just – their life's hard drive is saved on Microsoft Exchange, and mm-hmm. I don't think anyone's ever told them what happens when Exchange disappears, but that's the reality for that. Federal agencies, by and large, have all adopted the no USB policy as part of one of the numerous NIST standard numbers. So at least when I was at NASA, we used we were allowed to use USB drives, but they had to be NASA issued, and they had to be they had to meet the minimum Iron Key encryption requirements for storing files, and you couldn't cross-contaminate drives. So you could only use a work drive on a work computer, and you could only use a personal drive on a personal computer. So you couldn't plug the work into the personal, or vice versa. Mm-hmm.
And that's a similar policy that corporations are taking. There, a lot of them are starting to do BYOD, especially with mobile, because it's cheaper. You know, you already got a phone here. We'll just give you $20 a month off your phone, and you can use your phone for work. And so that's actually a pretty hot topic, especially in my area. We talk about it a lot. We don't get tested a lot because they want it to work. You know how that goes. You know?
Well, John, I've got to put a password, right? I get forced policies upon mm-hmm. myself when I do that. I'm assuming there's some encryption or something
yes.
associated with that when it's making its way. Plus, they can control my phone if I lose it for whatever reason, or mm-hmm. I leave, they can remote wipe it for any that
exactly.
gives them the ability to wipe it as well. So I'm assuming those are all best practices. Is there anything on the horizon around that that's maybe new that well, we've been talking about this level of security for a while? I think most organizations are getting there mm-hmm. now, as opposed to a year ago, you know, maybe not, right? It was just starting to come out, and people were kind of realizing maybe a year or two ago. Anything that you're looking ahead on that when we talk about bringing your own device, USB ports, whatever, that's on the horizon for that?
Actually, a lot of companies are trying to go more and more with these virtual desktop environments, and to the point that, you know, a couple companies that I've dealt with are attempting to make pretty much all of the end user systems that they can. So people, I guess, who aren't traveling constantly onto VDI, and in that case it's volatile, so when it doesn't matter, I could go on and intentionally download a dozen viruses, but as soon as I log off, that memory just disappears anyways. So that's one method that they're kind of going to, instead of, and then you've got the BYOD where they segment it off, and that's kind of the thing right now. Just like with your phone, I know I have a special app on my phone for my work emails and calendar, and it's literally segmented and encrypted off to the side, and I can't access it without putting in my incredibly long password that I cannot do while I'm driving.
You've tried.
I've tried many times and almost wrecked, so not a good idea. What I see, but I'm sure there's new stuff.
Well, interestingly enough, I mean that we're kind of, I think we're over the hump of this in the corporate world, where it's just an accepted, right today it's just accepted, it's what you're going to do. Most organizations are adopting it. I think we're beyond, you know, we're beyond a lot of that in a lot of organizations. And I could be wrong. That's the sense I get out there. Do you get that sense from people at the conference that you're, you know, at these conferences as well?
Oh yeah, I would say so. I mean, the sense is that we're past the basics, at least in most cases. So that's a good thing. At least sure. we're moving past, because it's for so many years it's been like, you know, strong passwords. Just put in some strong passwords, or you know, make sure you don't leave default stuff. And now we're finally getting past that. Companies are starting to take it seriously. They're hiring pen testers. you know. So it's getting a lot more serious.
A little more proactive. You'd put here in the show notes as well, extreme privilege escalation on Windows 8 with UEFI.
Yes, this was a cool talk. Some of it was a little over my head, but it was really cool. These guys were able to – the whole point of UEFI BIOS is that it's supposed to be protected. You know, it's even kind of difficult to go into the BIOS if you're on a Windows 8 computer. You have to kind of jump through some hoops to get in there. But these guys managed to show in real time they basically could completely kill it by just writing some Fs to the very beginning, like six Fs, which is zeros, you know, to the very beginning of the ROM that starts the computer, and it bricked the computer. Just totally brick it. And then there was other where they took it further because it goes through stages, and it kind of has a cutoff point in the middle where you've got pre-authenticated stuff taking place, like the computer turning on and making sure that the video card is there, etc. And then if you can get in there prior to that authentication, you can end up kind of flowing along with the process, and then you can get you can escalate your privileges is the thing there. That was a surprising one. That was a good one.
Yeah, and UEFI has really become, I like to think of it as the operating system in and of itself before the computer. I mean, you see a lot of machines now that have, like, the Asus Express Gate is just an example of, like, you can get a web browser off a BIOS chip. Who would have thought of that a couple of years ago? And that's kind of bizarre, and I don't know how comfortable I feel about that.
And you're right. There's that. And the other thing, go back even, like, 10 years ago, if you wanted to update your BIOS, you actually had to go into your physical computer and switch your jumper to allow you to write to the BIOS. And that, of course, has changed for convenience purposes, but it also allows these kind of attacks. That's another thing that things like this are changing.
Yeah, and I mean, we have guys who have pretty much... So we have a whole group of people on BIOS mods that deal with UEFI BIOS modifications, and the image itself has like an RSA encrypted signature that you have to decrypt the BIOS image just to get to being able to modify it, and those are some of the harder modifications that we have going on over there. But UEFI will probably be, I would say, pretty much on all laptops in the next couple of years. I mean, they've dominated in the laptop space very quickly. The inside BIOS platform has rapidly grown and to support UEFI, and now really, at least on all the mobile devices, you're seeing either Phoenix UEFI or inside UEFI. Mm-hmm. And on the, you know, and the other, you know, 5-10 years ago, Award BIOS and AMI BIOS is America Megatrends. Those were the two big names. And AMI still has a lot of the desktop and server market share, but you don't often see AMI on laptops anymore. Mm-hmm. And Award was, of course, bought out by Phoenix, probably around like 2006, 2007. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty sure one of the only companies that's still using Award as like a mainstream desktop platform, and they might not even be doing it anymore, is Gigabit motherboards. Pretty much UEFI is where everything is going. And then there's also EFI without the U, and there's some interesting distinctions between that. But yeah, we're basically heading towards that GUI-based BIOS world. And even the image sizes, I mean, when you were talking about like the computer of 2004, you were talking about a BIOS chip that had maybe the image size was 256 kilobytes, and like, you know, the core option ROM, it's not an option ROM, the core module of that BIOS image was 128 kilobits. So basically you got from the power on stage through the post in 128 kilobytes. Now with this UEFI stuff, you're talking like 8-16 megabyte images, which are like, yeah, you know, that doesn't sound big in our standards of storage, but you got to remember, the BIOS chip technology is very unique in the way the addressing spaces are laid out and designed, and it's not like a USB drive. It's very different, but just thinking like, oh wow, so 256 goes into 1024 four times, and then multiply that out another eight times, and you're saying we've increased the BIOS image on average by over 32 times. So my answer to that is, yeah, 32 times more probability that someone can sneak something in there.
And part of what they were showing, so the increase in size has left blank spaces, which is another. So if they can decompile it and figure out what these blank spaces are, then they're able to put it in there. There's more room to put more stuff in there. You can actually make a working version that has malware put into it, like persistent malware. So it's pretty scary stuff. And one thing on what Christian said, the UEFI, the fact that it's so pervasive all of a sudden is my all Microsoft's fault, because they basically said if you want to put a Windows 8 sticker on your computer, you have to have UEFI. And so they kind of forced it out, and maybe it wasn't ready for the big time yet, but I'm sure because it's so easily updatable that, people doing research like this is going to help get things better. So.
So, John, besides the, besides Microsoft maybe pushing harder on that, are there any inherent security issues with Windows itself in UEFI on that? Because Windows 8 has some new, I mean, that's kind of Windows 8 and UEFI came together.
They did, but I know it's kind of a separate area. I mean, that BIOS is what it loads up all your drivers and then hands it over to the kernel or over to the Windows. So unless I'm wrong, Christian might be able to correct me on that, but I think that it's kind of like you start here and then it goes over to here. So I think that the privilege escalation and the issues with it are more kind of segregated between the two. There's plenty of problems with Windows. There always has been. Granted, I love Windows still. I use it every day. I
Yeah,
mean, I got
it's
no
easy to pick
choice.
on. It's easy to pick on. Anything to add to that, Christian?
Well, I think what John brought up earlier is really important in terms of talking about the volatility of the BIOS write space. Is that, yes, if you write that first pad block with Fs, now you've lost the, one address hook that you need to start that whole sequence of BIOS magic, right? So in some cases, you can design as secure architecture as you want, but if someone gets access to that hook, yeah, obviously it's basically like, well, why don't I just boot my computer without a BIOS chip in it? Because now it can't find my BIOS chip runtime anyway. But I mean, really, I would say the answer to that architectural problem is not let's redesign how that hooking procedure works. It's really about how do we strictly enforce BIOS write protect. And on desktops, it's like one thing, like you were saying with the, we used to have the jumper and so forth. No one wants to do that on a laptop, yet alone have to take it apart. I almost wonder, would manufacturers find it too cumbersome and bothersome to put a switch on the bottom of a laptop, just like, a switch to keep the battery in the locked position? Are we really going to go there? I don't know. Probably not.
No.
But that always intrigued me as being
And that
kind
would be
of,
a good option, yeah.
yeah,
I agree.
like here, the buck stops at physical access to this machine.
And it does. And that, I mean, because it's obvious if you have your hands on the computer, you've got it. You can own the computer. But if you can change the BIOS remotely or brick the computer remotely, yeah, I mean, that's bad news,
Well, and here's the interesting thing. From a security standpoint, being able to re-engineer the BIOS could have some potentially deadly effects if, in fact, someone was genius enough to do the following, which is basically detect the victim computer. So I'm Joe the victim, and Joe the victim has, an ASUS motherboard model number ABCD. And okay, now I'm going to download the vendor image for that computer, and I'm going to basically drop out an option ROM that controls like booting up some, you know, like for example, booting up the FireWire port that no one uses. And so we drop that part of the code out, and instead we inject this nice little runtime sequence that sends us some nice things back. You've just created what I call, you know, the ticking time bomb of computing, where, you know, a Avira antivirus or whatever the virus of choice isn't going to say, hey, you got a virus, because it's only looking at your hard drive. Mm-hmm. And so I wouldn't be surprised if hardware-level cybersecurity starts to take emphasis in these areas. I mean, we've already seen this with stuff like Stuxnet, right? That was just pretty much, you know, burning the metal right out of you know, the actual chips on that machinery itself. But doing that in like a conventional computing way.
Christian, we just lost your audio for a second.
Yep.
Can you hear us, Christian?
No, he can't hear us.
He's talking. That's weird. Maybe he's infected. Hey, Christian, we can't. Can you see us? He keeps talking. So
Is he still talking?
We can't. Yeah, we can't hear you.
It's
yeah.
too bad. He probably is telling us something amazing.
Well, we were having this. We were having this discussion earlier. We'll wait for Christian to come back here for a second, and while he does that, he's having a few driver problems, and maybe his board is infected. But John, because we're the Average Guy podcast, and I just got some. I just got some feedback. Christian, are you back?
Yeah, can you hear me now?
I can't hear you now.
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to hold that question. Like the last three sentences we didn't hear there, or you just kind of cut out on us.
So. Can you say the last thing I said?
Sorry.
I'll just resume. So I'm not suggesting that this...
I don't even understand what you're saying most of the time.
Well, not... Yeah, okay, fine. So what I was trying to get at, though, is that, you know, it would be really awesome, and again, I'm trying not to promote this on public broadcast, but if someone can come and email me and say, yes, I know how to do this, this would be cool as a research project, is here's Internet Explorer, I'm a user, and can I create a virus that when someone clicks something on Internet Explorer, it basically starts a little runtime in the background that does this whole thing I just explained to you, which is drop out the module from the BIOS, flash the chip on Windows without them knowing, reboot, and then get some kind of communication back from that BIOS chip. That would be impressive.
Mm-hmm. That would be.
Obviously, one of the things I think of right off the bat is that Windows is relatively good with detecting the higher elevation requests for writing to privileged address spaces. But if you could find a way to disable that in the process, that would be fascinating to me.
Yes. Well, I would recommend checking out the PDFs from this guy's talk. There was definitely some... I mean, some of it, like I said, was over my head. I'm not a BIOS hacker. It's not something I've ever messed with. But he was talking about that, how you can take the privileges all the way up, and if you do it early enough, then you can do that, and you can write, you know, a keylogger or something into there, and, I mean, you could do some damage. You could really, and it'd never be detected. You'd never know it was there. But I don't think anybody's done what you suggested. That would be just too awesome. I agree.
Too awesome and too scary all at the same time.
Somebody hasn't done it yet.
Depends who does
it. That we know of.
NSA is probably doing it right now. So.
There's stories about that, but for another time. I'm going to make a pitch really quick that if you do have more BIOS questions, we are now HTTPS only enabled, meaning we live on the encrypted SSL net now, bios-mods.com. And if you head out to the forums there, we're talking everything about BIOS modification and unlocking pretty much all the time. So we're pretty much the one-stop shop for that.
There's not many.
Yeah, My Digital Life is one of the only other big communities that is still around in this area, and we've lost, actually, some really valuable documents on how the modification process works for some of the older stuff with sites that have since shut down. And I was able to pull the content back today with the good old Wayback Win machine, but, you know, we're...
Nice.
We're one of the only dinosaurs still doing this stuff. So,
Christian,
yeah,
you're offering
that's cool.
you offered to bring the AverageGuy.tv up to that same standard, right?
That's right. So, oh yeah, and we're going to cover this on Cyber Frontiers, but my quick description tag into that segment will be: Google announced that sites are going to be slightly preferenced if they are HTTPS only, in response to like their changes to all Google data centers being encrypted in transit and all that stuff. So we'll talk about that on Monday. But yeah, that's the new standard that I've now made in compliance across our web platform. And I'm going to talk tips about how you do that on the cheap, but on the accuracy level. And if you really want to know how I've set it all up so that I get full SSL support for 5 years, $25 over that 5 year period, then you should probably hang out on Monday. So,
very cool.
So John, Christian's going to overcharge me for this upgrade. Is it something I really need to do? I mean, do I really need to take my site to HTTPS to get?
You kind of are the opposite of keeping your stuff secret in a way, because you want people to see it. You're a broadcaster, right. But at the same time, I am more on the side that everything should have HTTPS. Why not? You know, at least it's sure, you know, we can strip the SSL or whatever. I'm sure that the feds can do the same, but it's a hurdle. It slows them down, you know.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And plus, it's just nice.
No, and I agree with you. I mean, I'm half joking. Christian's going to do it for a dime. I mean, it's not very much, but. And we'll probably move that way, Christian, just because I want to do it because it's cool,
yeah.
You know, kind of deal. It's just a good thing to do. But, John, I want to come back real quick. When we talk about this, maybe these last two vulnerabilities in particular, and let's maybe stay in UEFI for just a second. For the average person, I mean, what does this really mean? You guys threw a whole bunch of stuff out there. But,
yeah,
I mean, really, does the average guy need to be – let me start with you, John. We'll come over to you, Christian.
Yeah.
Do we need to be concerned just – the average user, I just helped somebody buy a computer today, mm-hmm. you know, online.
With Windows 8.
Do they need to be worried?
No. I honestly, I mean, and Christian might disagree with me, but he is definitely way more BIOS oriented than I am. It's not something I've messed with a lot, but I'm not scared. I mean, I'm going to continue to use Windows 8. I think somebody'd really have to be targeting you. It's, you know, it's the same thing. If you're targeted, you're screwed. So as long as you're not targeted, the UEFI is fine too. I'm sure it's kind of a complicated hack. So I think you're fine.
Okay. Christian?
Yeah, no, I pretty much agree with that. For the most part, it's going to be, I mean, those edge cases on what you see on these conferences are probably, some of it is like, it's in the here and now. This is an example of, you know, for the probably next 2 or 3 years where people will probably try and start to manipulate this to be like a broader issue. But, you know, that's one of the cool things about these conferences is that you get to see like some of the here and now, but then you get to see some of the stuff that like it's capable of happening now, but it's not going to be in the windmill, so to speak, for another couple of years. So
okay. Yeah, there's nobody actually doing it, and right. You know, it's like it's not in the wild.
We're not widespread, right?
Bad it's USB. Not. They said that they had not seen it in the wild at all. You know, it doesn't mean it's not necessarily out there, but they hadn't found any evidence of it. Same thing with this. I don't think it's actually been seen in the wild, just in a lab. So
okay. Okay, well, it's always good to come back to it, right? I mean, we get really nerdy and especially security nerdy when we talk about this kind of stuff, and it's all really cool, and I get about half of it, and our listeners probably do too. I've got some this week. I got some response back. Let me flip the camera here. I got some response back from we've been starting an email, like a newsletter at theaverageguy.tv. So if you haven't subscribed to that, you might want to. A monthly newsletter, updates on what's going on here. Just a great way for me to communicate with you guys, because I found out this week not everybody's on social media, right? I got an email from somebody who said, hey, thanks for creating this list. I don't do Twitter. I don't do Facebook, right? And this is a great way for me to communicate with you. So yep. Head out to theaverageguy.tv and sign up. We've had about 20 of you do it. I'd love to get more. If you want to do it, it's up to you. But along those lines, you know, one of the guys had said who wrote me back, he was like, hey, thanks for what you do, but some of the time I just don't have any idea what you guys are talking about. And we tend to get a little, even though it's average guy stuff. So I always want to try and bring that back. You know, what does that really mean? I think there's some super really good stuff in here, but I think not to alarm anybody. Mm-hmm. At this point, it's probably not going to happen to
this
you.
This is lab stuff. You're probably fine. I would agree.
Okay, good stuff. Let's move on a little bit. Anything else you want to cover in that section?
Not from EUFI, but there was one more from Black Hat I just want to mention real quick.
Yeah.
I put two more on there. The 802.1x one is interesting for anybody that's technical and has messed with wireless and radius and enterprise. And I know those are probably all, you know, crazy terms, but if you've messed with that stuff, I highly recommend checking out that talk, because basically he showed how incredibly broken that system is. It was really cool. The other one was Kerberos, which is, I still think, a hilarious word. I'll never forget the first time I heard it, because like, Kerberos, what is this, you know? But these guys really did abuse it you know.
See, bad. I would love to see that. Yeah,
that was a great one. This was, you know, he goes by Gentil Kiwi. He's very French and kind of hard to understand. He's the guy who wrote Mimikatz, which is kind of a pass-the-hash tool that a lot of hackers use. But what he did with Kerberos, it just, in a nutshell, it was mind-blowing. It was
John,
one of
what
the,
is Kerberos real quick, just yep, for those? Yep.
No problem. So when you, especially a corporate computer, Kerberos is kind of the authentication system that works along with Active Directory. It would basically grant because it will give you a ticket granting ticket, which allows you to get a ticket, which allows you to get a service level ticket. But basically, it's what authenticates you to Active Directory. So when you go to work and you log into your computer with your work LAN ID and your work email or whatever, that is going to be through Active Directory, and it's most likely using Kerberos, almost definitely. But what he showed that was really mind-blowing was that you could capture these Kerberos tickets off the wire from an unauthenticated computer. So basically, he took a computer that was not part of this Active Directory and not part of this network, was able to go on there and snatch this ticket and then rebroadcast it and get onto the network. That was pretty cool. So then he takes it a step further and he snatches this ticket and he modifies the ticket to make it escalated privileges. Even gets cooler. Then he goes, and this is the part that blew my mind, is he totally went beyond that and did this thing called a golden ticket. All of this can be done in the new version of Mimikatz. If anybody out there is a hacker and wants to mess with it, it's pretty fun stuff. And he actually made what he called a golden ticket and referenced Willy Wonka, which is funny. But literally from whole cloth made the Kerberos ticket. I mean, the username was like FU and the password was like gibberish, you know. I mean, just completely made it up and was able to get, you know, domain admin level privileges with a completely made up. And it'll last for 20 minutes. Your Kerberos ticket's good for 20 minutes. But it was just, wow. I mean, it blew my mind. That was definitely the coolest talk, the most...
That's amazing.
Also the scariest talk, because Kerberos is what all of us rely on at work, you know, and it was cool stuff. And I did... There is the slideshow, because he also talked at DEF CON. So the slideshow is in my links. Okay. And go check it out, you know.
You know what, that's a...
It'll be posted, too.
It's a great example of when Mark Goldstein on the Cyber Frontier podcast was talking about what it means to be insider threat. And this is the type of thing that is deathly scary to the insider threat problem.
Yep.
Where, I mean, 20 minutes is a lot of time to do damage. And you don't need more than 2 minutes, but to have that elevated access to go in and, you know, add a permanent account or,
exactly.
you know,
Yeah.
I mean, that's incredible. I mean, we're talking federal agencies and Fortune 500 across the country are using Kerberos. This is not just some, if you want the windmill analogy, this is not in the windmill. This is boots on the ground now.
And that's why this was the scariest one.
Yeah. And
everyone's using it.
And that's got to be frightening for a lot of people, because... I don't think there's a patch out for that yet. So
no.
I bet a lot of people are scratching their heads right now going, oh boy. And, and this is big for Microsoft, because Microsoft's entire enterprise architecture is built around the Kerberos authentication mechanism.
Yeah.
So that is a big punch in the stomach to a lot of companies right now. You know, the only thing that mitigates it is you hope that your employees that you've hired are trustworthy enough not to be doing that, or aren't that smart to be doing
the
that.
The scary part, though, is it doesn't even have to be an insider. This guy came in, plugged into the network, you know, unless you've got port
Sure.
security going, and he plugged in from a non-authenticated computer. So
yeah,
I walk
huge.
In as a delivery guy and plug in, you know, I mean, it just, it's mind-blowing. There's no doubt I have to give a presentation about, you know, my key highlights from Black Hat and DEF CON at work in a couple of weeks, and this is the top of it. In fact, I don't even care if I get to anything else. This is the thing I'm going to tell them about, because this is a scary thing to me.
Yeah, if you don't mind making sure those notes definitely show up in show notes.
Yep.
And and if
and I link to the slides, so they're in there. And the DEF CON is really good about putting up the talks, and he also talked at DEF CON. I didn't go, but I assume, I mean, it was supposed to be the same stuff. So you'll actually will get to see the talk in a few weeks or a couple months whenever they actually post it. So that'll be good too.
And Christian, you have access to the show notes right now. If you
yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Very good. But we will include everything John's talking about here. He's got a bunch of reference links.
Yeah.
You will definitely, the world-class show notes that I talk about in the very beginning, you'll want to come back. Some good links here if you're interested in doing. And I, you know what? And I'm not, I mean, I'm not a security guy from that standpoint, but I do find this very interesting. So it's good. You'd mentioned port security, of course, and Christian, we had talked way back on one of the earlier Cyber Frontiers about reducing that footprint, the security
area.
Footprint, the surface yep. area, right? Reducing that. Certainly locking your ports down or shutting off ports that are not currently in use, that's one of those methodologies, right? If you know you've got rooms where ports are not being used consistently, you can go and mm-hmm. physically unplug those or whatever you do. I'm sure there's more sophisticated ways to do it along those lines. But and I'm sure there's other things you can do to kind of reduce that surface area and make sure that you don't just have a delivery guy come in. You know, that's stuff of 24, right? You know, where the guy comes in, he looks
yep.
like a delivery guy, and he plugs in
or
and
sneakers.
Does some stuff. Yeah.
Like the best movie of all time. That is like when I'm working at home, and when I have some noise in the background, it's almost always Sneakers. I just turn it on. I've seen it 10 million times, but if you don't remember that movie, Robert Redford, you know, just, it's like, for me, it was like quintessential, like, pen testing security hacker movie. That is why I got into this field.
Yeah.
Awesome movie.
Cool. Hey, Lopta asks, was it due to a flaw in Kerberos, or is it a flaw in Microsoft's implementation of it?
I think it's a little of both. But I don't, you'd really have to look at the details,
okay.
you know, and I didn't dig
yeah,
in
yeah,
that
yeah.
deep.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
But it's still scary.
Yeah. Well, I think it's, you know, with every level, we've got these really scary things that I think it at any given point, you take any one of them out of context and holy crap, it sounds like Ebola.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're like, we have the plague, right?
Yeah. And you're right about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you start saying, yes, but, and then you know, you start adding these things in and you go,
yeah.
okay, well, it certainly is there, but.
I got to be honest though, this is pretty big. I mean,
yeah,
in terms of.
That was the biggest one. Mm-hmm.
Like we, the thing at work that I, the one thing I've learned in the last 6 months at work is we're not curing cancer, but this is kind of like, this is somewhere in the middle of we're not curing cancer and we are curing cancer
yeah.
in the security world. I'm not sure
we're
which,
causing
but
it.
yeah, that,
yeah.
that's
yeah.
pretty bizarre.
So I highly recommend that one. It was great. And the guy who gave the talk, I mean, well, Mimikatz is one of those tools that's like, I don't know, epic or whatever, you know.
Well,
everyone.
I can only imagine the taps that are set up on that website for when you click to download Mimikatz, who is watching and recording that little
mm-hmm.
activity from your IP address.
I am on so many lists, it's disgusting. I can only imagine, because I have downloaded all of that and more. So I know we're getting kind of low on time. There's one thing from DEF CON. I really wonder if we have time to.
Yeah, let's do it. No, we're good. Go ahead, John. Yeah.
Okay, so at DEF CON every year, they give out these kind of crazy badges. I'll hold this up kind of close. And now my lights aren't coming on it. Hang on a second here. It actually has lights if they want to come on. Thing is, it kind of went through a rough week when I carried it around. So now my lights don't want to come on. But it has LEDs on it, and it's got a quad-core propeller processor on there. I mean, this is no joke. And then what's really cool is they've put together these badge challenge each year. This year is the second year, I think, that the guy who goes by Lost put it together. I put a link in here from these guys called Potato Chat Security, Potato Hat Security, and they actually walk through the badge challenge, and it's pretty darn cool stuff. I mean, they show, because you, in the pamphlets you get, like in the, when you go get your badge, you get this little pamphlet thing. It's like a little book, and it actually has a bunch of random spaces in here where it just has numbers, like strings of numbers. Well, it's all codes. I mean, it starts off real simple, like 1 equals A, 2 equals B, and it means something. And but then, you know, you take out the dashes, and all of a sudden you've got a URL. And then this URL leads you to just some ridiculous picture of, like, well, this one led to a picture of just, like, this old guy. But if you figured out who he was, then you could look at his wiki, or yeah, the wiki page, and then you could figure out something else about him, and you would say, oh, and it's just crazy. So if you get a chance to check out the challenge walkthrough, it's just mind blowing, all the stuff they did. You know, I was more worried about the talks and socializing, but I think next year, you know, this is something I'll want to give a shot to. They even have all these things on the floors all throughout the Rio that, you know, they're just a big DEF CON logo, but around it, it'll have numbers. Or in the middle, it had a QR code. I mean, just, it was just, that's really cool when you get to do that. And you can plug this badge into your computer with the little propeller software. You can dump the software that's on it. You can pull it off and you can put other software on. I haven't messed with propeller boards before, but I messed with the Arduino. And it's similar, and you can actually, has IRs on it. So at the con, if you flashed your badge to a certain setting, then you could, like, push one of these buttons and make other people's badges flash or do weird things. And yeah, so it's pretty cool what they do with the badges, you know, as compared to my Black Hat badge, which did I bring that one with me? Oh, sorry, I probably just making everyone dizzy there. I didn't, but
again,
the Black
just
Hat
had
badge.
A seizure.
Yeah, the Black Hat badge is literally just, you know, it just says my name and it's just Black Hat. It's just paper, you know, which is funny because I paid, you know, or would have paid $1,800 for that one. This was $200. But yeah, the badge is one awesome part of DEF CON. Of course, everything is awesome.
That's a pretty amazing. I mean, it's almost like it's the badge is hackable, right?
It is. It's exactly what it is. Yeah, and I don't know if my battery's died or if this little battery compartment, it's kind of loose. You know, I may have dropped it a couple times. They were giving out free beer one night at the Rio.
Well, you can't pass that up.
Yeah, exactly. At the Rio is like unheard of.
Yeah,
so
that Rio is pretty nice for sure.
Yeah, to get free beers.
Yeah, no, that sounds pretty cool. That I mean, that they're really engaging. I mean, from that perspective, that the badge was engageable, if you could, you know, say that, and do some stuff with it. And Christian, that you got to be looking at that, kind of going, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah. And what sucked? They ran out the first day, so. I just couldn't imagine having waited in line or driven all the way to Vegas or whatever and waited in line for hours, because you can only buy these with cash at the gate. You can't pre-register.
Okay.
And so, but, well, unless you're at Black Hat, and then you can pre-register, so you get a cheat. But, so I cheated. I got mine through Black Hat, and so I knew I would get one. But there was, you know, thousands of people, there were hundreds of people that were walking around with a big paper thing, that just human badge, and it was paper, you know, and that would have made me so mad. I would have been so upset about that. That was part of what I was looking forward to. They also did this, I know you guys are almost out of time, but
no,
this
hey,
is
don't worry about time, John. We're good.
Okay.
We're good.
This is something that will really, it's great for the average guy, and this is this So Hopelessly Broken competition that they did, and SOHO is small office, home office. And they're talking about the router that you have at home. And they brought in, I think it was 8 or 10 different routers. The real common ones, Linksys, and the one that Cox gives you, and the one that CenturyLink gives you. I mean, just the router. I mean, if you looked at them, you're like, oh, yeah, I have that one. And my father-in-law is that one. And my mom is that one. I mean, you see all these routers. And they had a contest to see finding 0 days in there. And 0 days are unpatched flaws that are generally pretty bad. They, just during the 4 days of DEF CON, came out with 15 0 days for these. So your home router is very insecure. You know, lock it down, give it a long password. I mean, the list goes on. There's things you can do to secure it. Really put new firmware in it would be the best way to
Oh,
go. And
really?
that,
So that I
yeah.
could do that? I
Yeah,
could upgrade it
most
or
routers. Yep, you could
yeah.
put, and you, I'm talking, forget what Linksys is trying to give you and go on, even on EFF's website.
DD
Yep, DD-Word, exactly. That's another good one. And EFF is actually working, the whole point of this is that they're working to make a sort of open source new version of DD-Word. But yeah. So that was another one that is very affecting, you know, the consumer to the consumer.
freaking hate these conversations because I get all nervous. You guys scare
Yeah.
the hell out of me.
Yeah, you walk out of the conferences, there's two things on the plane on the way home. One is, oh my God, I can't believe I drank that much beer this week. And the other one is, oh my God, I can't believe everything is so screwed. You know, I mean, you walk out feeling those two things. You're just like, yeah, it's, I'm sure some people walk out depressed, and not just because they drank too much over the week, you know.
John,
So
pretty international audience there for that.
very international. In fact, at the couple of the talks, they were showing map, like all the different people from all the different places, and they, I think 200 countries were represented, or I mean, just some absurd number. They're like, there's that many countries out there. But yeah, it was pretty crazy.
And John, you made a reference to Propeller earlier. What is that?
Oh, Propeller is just, it's the actual chip that's on here is a Propeller chip. I believe they made the whole board. If you've ever messed with Arduino, in fact, last time I was on here, I talked a little bit about Arduino. They're just kind of hackable boards, customizable. You can use them to make robots, you could use it to make quadcopters, use them in all kinds of things. They're kind of the brain, but they're really customizable. You can change the ROMs, you can add bits to them. That's the other contest. One of the contests they have is whoever hacks the badge the best. And the guy who had the best hack this year actually turned his into a quad, which was pretty badass. I mean,
Like a quadcopter.
a quadcopter. And
Yeah.
I think he just put an Arduino board on top, but still, he made it so it could fly, and that was pretty cool, you know. So it's,
Ah,
I
very cool.
mean, it's cool. And they have all
Yeah.
kinds of contests to capture the flag, and it is like the World Series of Capture the Flag, which is it's a hacker competition, which is about the least exciting competition in the world to watch, because it's literally a bunch of guys who sit in front of their computers in little teams, very secretive because they don't want anyone to see their awesome code. And I mean, it's fun to play, it's fun to do, but to watch, no, you wouldn't. It's not a spectator sport.
Just wait for the results, right?
Yeah, wait for the results. You know, they had some cool videos playing in there. You could walk through, but yep.
Very cool.
Yeah, there's a
Very.
lot of stuff in the notes I put on here,
Yeah.
but just go through them. All kinds of fun stuff, and in like I said, in about 2 months, all of these talks will be online. DEF CON, at least, they put all of their talks online in high quality, excuse me, high quality video, very good stuff. It'll be on
Okay.
those archives that I
Yeah.
linked at the very top.
Yeah, and we'll put those all out in the show notes again. So if you want to go out and take a peek, there's more than what we talked about here, but certainly a lot of information. Overwhelming at times, I'll be honest. Overwhelming to deal with, you know, just kind of be like, "Oh, man, I got to read up on oh, man, I'm screwed here." Oh, you know, it's like every time we have Amber on from LastPass, you know, I'm just like, "Oh, now I got to go change all my
Yeah,
passwords and
I know, I need to do
with
that.
everything that's going on." Christian, anything else you want to add?
Yeah, no, I think that's the big piece for sure. Definitely within the next 2 years, I'm going to commit to going to one of these conferences 'cause,
$220, you know, and
yeah.
I told my wife next year, she wants to go, and she's a theater person, but she wants to go because she knows that the evenings are fun, you
Yeah,
know,
yeah,
and
yeah.
it's
Well,
Vegas.
it's not always the cost of the conference. I mean, I can get into CES for free. It's the flights and the hotels. I mean, especially during those times, you know, you think, oh, Vegas is cheap. No, it's not actually cheap during those times,
I'm
especially
pretty
during
proud of
CES.
myself, though. I went to Denver for travel and didn't really do anything in Denver except hang out in my hotel and work. But I mean, I spent more than a week in Vegas. So my actual, like, my expense report was $7 less for my week in Vegas.
Oh, yeah. You can.
So.
Well, the nice thing about Vegas is you never have to pay for food for the most part, especially
Well,
if you
food
go.
actually is the only thing I paid for.
Oh,
Actually,
really?
that yeah, food
Okay.
and cabs. Drinks, especially at DEF CON, and especially if you work for a big company like you guys do, you don't pay for drinks because every vendor there wants you to buy their stuff, and therefore they're going to take you to lunch and they're going to take you to a party with all free drinks, you know, I mean, so.
Yeah, well, for sure, that's the Vegas culture, and it's all good from that standpoint. Well, so John, you've officially probably worked yourself off of Home Gadget Geeks and onto Cyber Frontiers.
Sounds good.
Going forward, I should
Sounds
probably
good.
stop having you here because you're scaring the bejesus out of me, and probably a lot of our Gadget listeners. But certainly, what Christian's doing with Cyber Frontiers, or what we're trying to
Definitely.
do with Cyber Frontiers, is. Is probably more along those lines. Wouldn't you say,
Cool.
Christian?
Yeah, for sure. No, we
Yeah,
gotta have
hit
him
me
over.
up. I'm game. I'm always
Yeah,
game,
yeah.
so
No,
hit me
we've got
up.
a good little gig going on with Cyber Frontiers, and we've got some things fired up and started. Certainly, the platform is there. I've been, working over the last couple months to get all the pieces put together, just from a podcast perspective.
Oh,
I
sure.
don't know, Jack, about what you guys are talking about, but I will certainly be able to record it. And have some great conversations around it. And so if you're interested in more of this, might want to migrate your way over
Sure.
to Cyber Frontiers. So good stuff. So
And we're going to, well, at least I'm going to be broadcasting live from the new fortress, which is Prince Frederick Hall, where all things honor cybersecurity will be taking place in the fall. So that will be
nice.
fun.
Yeah. We won't expect a tour, but
Yeah, you will.
All
It's going to
right.
happen within the first week.
Some kind of cyber tour that Christian will take us through. And
Yeah.
well, we made it through the podcast. I've been having to manually switch the video. So if you made it to the end of this and you're watching the video and you're like, oh, how come it was late and blah, blah, blah. Well, Google's doing some weird stuff. I don't know what's going on with Hangouts, but they have not been as stable as they've been lately. But we made it through a podcast. Let me do some housekeeping. You guys hang tight for just a second. We'll wrap up the recorded part of the podcast, and we'll jump into some post-show stuff. And of course, the
All right.
post-show is almost always better than the show because it's like
Yeah.
gloves come off, and every show I do, the post-show is really good. But you don't get the post-show unless you're at the live show. So we'll say if this is the first time you're listening to this, maybe you came in and you're wondering what are these guys doing. We're live every Thursday night with Home Gadget Geeks, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, out at theaverageguy.tv/live, and love to have you a part of the community. Many of you have joined us on the Facebook page, and we'd love to have you come out. All those links for everything subscribable, including our new newsletter, as well as new brand new iTunes feeds, all available at theaverageguy.tv. So I won't bore you with that. You guys all know how to go out and get that stuff, but there is a new subscribe page. So theaverageguy.tv/subscribe will get you there, or there's a link up in the top. And everything we've done, a bunch of brand new stuff that's out there for you as well. Love to have you do that. Want to say thanks for supporting the Average Guy Tech Scholarship Fund and for all that that does. And you do that when you use theaverageguy.tv/Amazon. And we've got some items out now and some reviews hopefully coming back here fairly quickly. It's always funny. Everybody thinks it's going to take them a shorter than it actually does to review an item and actually get a post. It's a lot harder to make a post, I think, than most people think it is. And so those always get a little delayed. You can always come on the show too. We have a LastPass. Speaking of LastPass, we have a LastPass Enterprise. So if you're thinking about using LastPass for your organization, we have an affiliate link for the trial code. Again, that goes to the Tech Scholarship Fund here at theaverageguy.tv. Just go to theaverageguy.tv/LastPass trial, all one word, LastPass trial. We'll get you to that, and appreciate you using that link if you want to do it for that trial. And then the Home Server Show meetup's coming up in Indianapolis here September 20th, and we still got a bunch of spots open. It's $20. That'll help us cover lunch when you come out there, but I'll be driving out, Dave McCabe, and we've got 25 guys, 30 guys already lined up for it. It'll be a great meetup. We always have a good time, and so the link to that will be in the show notes as well. If you want to come out to the meetup, we'd love to have you out there. And then one more reminder, I do Ask the Podcast Coach Saturday mornings, 9:30 Central, 10:30 Eastern. No show this week, but if you're a podcaster, aspiring podcaster, want to know some things about podcasting, I know a few things, not too many, but a few, maybe more than I know about security out there on podcasting at Ask the Podcast Coach. And we do that at askthepodcastcoach.com/ live. All right. Well, this will wrap up the recorded version of this. We'll hang around for a little bit of post show. So if you're in the chat room, hang tight. And John, great to see you. It's great because you're in town, man. I mean, this is the awesome thing about it. We should probably get together for lunch.
Sure.
A little more often, somehow. This, you know, these other guys. There's no excuse for me because they're all over the country. Yeah, Christian even works for me, and I don't get to have lunch with him all the time. But here, you're in town, so we should we should make that happen. So, John, thanks for coming out. I appreciate it. Christian, great to see you as always. And I know we get to talk not every day. Just kind of guess it kind of depends on what's going on. But thanks for coming out tonight on short notice. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet.
We'll do it all over again next Thursday. And just real quick, if you want to know what's coming up, we had Social Bro early this morning. I mentioned that. But we also have Zapier. They're a web automation tool coming up. A lot of things you can do with social and social automation. That was kind of my summer of work. A lot of the things I did this summer revolved around social media and social media automation. And so I've gotten some of these guys to come on. Zapier's coming on next week as well. And then we're back. Wade Forrester from Zapier will be coming on. And then we're back to kind of the community stuff. Gordon Schmidt's coming on. We'll have Nathaniel and Kyle back on. Keith Lunsford's going to come back on and talk about his it's a quad. It's six propellers, though. So it's a
hexacopter.
And so, John, you might maybe we have you back on to talk about your quadcopter at that.
Which
together.
Is actually broken right now.
His is too.
I had like 500 feet in the air and.
Oh.
Yeah, it's all right. I've got extra parts. I just have to put it back.
They need parachutes. Keith talked to me tonight, and he said his was broken too. And I guess they're a little harder to fly than people think.
Yeah, they're a lot harder to fly.
That will be the 9/11. No irony there. That will be covering quadcopters and and hexacopters on the 9/11 version of Home Gadget Geeks. But those guys are coming back on as well. So that's the next couple weeks. Love to have you come out 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern at TheAverageGuy.tv/live. Good night.